Welcome to the fourth seminar in the London series of seminars co-sponsored by the Task Force and the Centre for Education and Industry at the University of Warwick. Our speaker today is Chris James, Professor of Educational Leadership and Management in the Department of Education at the University of Bath. Chris is the rare beast in that, not that in his career he's worked with numerous organisations, but he's worked really well with them. He's very effective at working with both academics and non-academics organisations. He's directed a large number of education research projects, published over 170 items, including 5 books, and over the last 2 years completed 2 research projects on school governing in England. Chris is chair of the Education Employers Task Force expert group on school governing. He is married to Jane, who is described as a serial school governor. And Chris has now become a governor himself of the secondary school in Bath, which his children attended. So will you please welcome Chris James.
Okay, thank you very much, Anthony. That's brilliant. I always enjoy coming to Task Force. It's the first time I've actually spoken to the Task Force. And one of the great things about being here to give a talk is that they very helpfully leave some guidance for the... For the presenters on the flip chart. So it says don't just lecture them, I don't know if you read that, don't use jargon, don't be boring, don't lose your focus, and don't overrun. So, fat chance of that today, I'll tell you. Okay, well, let's have a good exchange of ideas and thoughts about all of this. Just to be clear, what I'm saying actually arises out of the BITC project that Nick led and managed very, very effectively, and we had a really great time working on that project. That developed a big hatful of data, which then CFBT Education Trust, represented here by Karen Whitby, then funded an extension of that to take that analysis further. While that was going on, the task force set up an expert group on school governing, which was overseen and organised by a very, very bright guy called Christian Percy, some of you may know, and he and I got to thinking about the whole notion of employee governor, which was something that was around and about. So what you're getting here is going to be me giving a bit of out loud thinking about how all this knits together in a kind of a big way, kind of a meta way, which I find very helpful, because one of the difficulties in this whole field of school governing and employer engagement and employee engagement in school governing is you can kind of wallow around in a big mass of experience and data, which is extremely difficult to make much sense of. So if you've got a few overarching ideas, then actually that helps to, has certainly helped me to frame thinking and analysis. So a very straightforward title there, you see, and that's what we're going to be focusing on: school governing and employer and employee engagement in education. Okay, well, that's the three bits that I'm going to talk about, hence the three chunks I mentioned. Well, purpose of governing and how they're served by employee and employee engagement. There is a kind of view out there that this is taken as a good, that this is something we want. We need to be a bit stronger than that to actually secure why we think employee and employer engagement is good, and it's not enough to leave it at the, well, everybody benefits, don't they, which is all very nice. I think we need to understand it at a deeper level, and I think that needs to be linked with the purposes of governing as well. There's then pathways to engagement, which rework slightly the stuff that Christian and I had a good old run through and presented at the last Task Force research conference, which I have to say was one of the best research conferences I've been to in a while. And I don't know, I'm assuming everyone is going to the next one, but if you haven't signed up or you think you're a bit unsure about it, I would urge you to go. It's a good, sharp, focused day. Fantastic keynotes last year, I thought. And some good papers too, and a really nice vibe to it, so I urge you to go along. And then just to revisit these two kind of big ideas here, governance agency and governance capital, two notions which emerged from the CFBT funded project. Okay, so let's bash on then with the first section. I'm going to be talking about big ideas here, and of course I'm conscious that they're ideas that, with which you'll already be familiar. Generally speaking, what's governance concerned with? Well, it has two main functions overall. and it's about those two are about legitimacy and performance. Okay, so is this the right kind? Is this organisation the right kind of organisation? Is this institution doing what society expects of it? Is it proper in its functioning? Is it meeting its legal obligations? Is its conduct appropriate? Now that's all to do with legitimising the institution. Okay, and we mustn't lose track of that as actually a significant purpose for governing. What we've had, though, in the last 20 years, probably trace it back, I think its pedigree started with the whole new public management movement, which sought to revitalise management in the public sector. I know that boundary public and private is increasingly blurred, but the human service sector, in order to enhance performance. And you can trace that back to, in education, back to the mid-70s, really, when actually people started questioning whether the education service is giving good value for money, whether it's providing what society needs. Isn't it all a bit closed and self-referential? Shouldn't we be opening it up? Then you get performance management kicking in, management techniques from the private sector brought into the public sector, a really strong focus on service delivery, and seeking to revitalise the public sector's services in the way they work. By the way, seeing Anthony stand up to get a cup of coffee there, I thought what we'd do is operate the usual principles that apply in most proper and sensible organisations, and I've got in mind their infant school classrooms, which is that of self-management. So I'm expecting people will get up and organise their food and their tea and their coffee as I speak, and I shan't have any problem with that. So if you just behave like infant school pupils, that would actually be very helpful. Okay, in that regard. So what you find, though, if you look at this, as I've just said, is the emphasis for school governing has changed over time. And we've shifted. You look at the acts in the early 80s, what governors were charged with then. Not a lot of talk about performance, but if you look at it now, it's not only performance, it's an emphasis on data management and using data appropriately, helping the school to improve and those kinds of things. And also, of course, what's kicking in now is value for money, which is the latest way that this has been configured. So we've gone even beyond almost performance through to value for money as well. Okay, so, well, these purposes create a tension in the governing model. You then start looking at what those tensions are. A lot of tensions around school governing, as you'll read if you ever get through the BITC report where we spell them out. And one, of course, is the tension between stakeholder involvement and skills, and you can see the pedigree of that. Arguably, the constructing the stakeholder model in the way that it's constructed, that is, you have people from the major constituencies involved in school government saying this organisation, which has wide social importance, is doing the right things and is functioning properly. And then you've got something around performance then, which actually then starts saying, well, it's all very good, all very well getting parents in, members of the local community in, local authority councillors in. Have they got the skills to enable the institution to enhance performance? And of course, if any of you perhaps read the recent TES editorial, which was banging away at that very issue, slightly clumsy and ill-informed way, I thought, but nonetheless raising a pertinent issue. Which is of great concern. And we'll come back to that. It's not an either-or in my mind, it's a both-and. It is possible to get the stakeholder model working, it is possible to get the skills-based model working, it is possible to say that, to have both. And indeed, you don't need to be the sharpest knife in the drawer to realise there's an interplay between these two. We no longer think a school where the children are not given an opportunity to achieve, that is, it's underperforming, as a legitimate school. So we now actually seek to legitimise schools through performance. And there's a lot to be said for them. So But you have got these two strands, and what that means is, well, either and both, you've got to have effectiveness, yeah, remains important, but then you're left saying, well, effectiveness for what? So you've got the problem of effectiveness and school effectiveness. Let's just hammer that one home. Okay, there's a weak, but I have to say, discernible link between the effectiveness of primary school governing and primary school effectiveness. Okay, there's a link there. I'm tempted to draw a diagram on the flip chart, but that doesn't show up too well on the radio, so I won't talk about that. But if you just plot effectiveness against governing body effectiveness and school effectiveness against each other, you get a link, you get some kind of line. Effectiveness, governing effectiveness, school effectiveness, primary schools, you get a line. Bags of scatter around that line, but you get a line. Okay? The problem is when you seek to do that for secondary schools, governing body effectiveness, school effectiveness, you get a massive scatter. Okay? That's quite a tricky one. Okay? Let's just bottom out two things there. What the CFBT-funded research showed was the blindingly obvious to anyone who's been involved in school governings, and that's that primary school governing and secondary school governing are different. You then need to think out why they're different and what you might learn. Well, what you might learn is things around how well you know your school. And the fact is, a whole set of reasons, it's probably easier to know primary schools than secondary schools. So it is very much a size issue and a knowability issue, if that's ever a word. Nonetheless, this is a stylized fact, okay, a generality. There's plenty of examples, and we cite them in this in the Hidden Givers report, which is the findings of the CFBT Education Trust. Thanks to Karen for bringing a copy for you to take away and read on the train home or whatever. There's plenty of evidence in there that despite this stylized fact, governing bodies can have a dramatic effect on school students. There are plenty of stories in that document there of chairs of governing bodies making significant interventions into the performance of schools. There's plenty of stories in there. The other thing is that I was talking to some governors the other day, and someone very senior in a major organisation that deals with audits and things like that in England was in the audience. That's one of the nice things you get if you talk to governors. You're never quite sure who's going to be in the audience because there's plenty of employee engagement in governing. So a very senior person, and actually effectively said, what you're saying about secondary schools applies to large corporations, and that's my sense of the literature anyway. There's no very, very little correlation between the effectiveness of the board and the effectiveness of the corporation. And yes, that's such a tricky one, isn't it? We'd all like to believe the opposite. But what she said was, the thing is, the public expect good governance. So we're kind of back to the legitimacy thing, aren't we, really? You can have a brilliantly functioning board. Doesn't mean because they don't have any effect on performance you can do away with them, because we expect institutions to be well governed. There's a whole set of things that actually rather kind of shaky, flaky links between effectiveness of the board over there and effectiveness of the organisation over there. So there's many a slip between those two. But nonetheless, it's what the public expects. Okay, so what we have is, that looks like a quote I took from something, and I think it's probably a quote from the school's white paper that was published in November of last year, where the Education Employers Task Force was given the it's clearly stated, working with the government in encouraging the engagement of business people and professionals in school government. So we need to think, well, why is that such a brilliant idea? Well, let's just be clear, you know, business people, people who work for a living, can maybe very important stakeholders in education. There is a strong argument, and I think I buy into it, that schools are everybody's business. I don't think anybody should ever stop having an interest in how well schools work, a whole set of rather deep and fundamental reasons. And of course, many people in the employee world who work in big organisations have the very kinds of skills that can actually ask the difficult questions and face up to the difficult issues so they can impact on performance. So there's a very, very strong argument for employers and employees to be involved in school governing, in my view. Of course, the whole notion of business people can be difficult for some in education. There is no doubt that there are two sides to that coin. I think schools can be overly referential and protective of what they see as their special world, and can special plead and all sorts of things that go with that. There's also equally no doubt that many business people often enter into school governing perhaps with slightly the wrong frame of mind in the way that they think they're going to be able to contribute and make a difference that they're so keen to make. So there's a problem with boundary issues there and how the two worlds connect. But when it does happen, it does happen to extraordinarily good effect. And I can cite numerous examples of where I've seen people in a variety of governing settings bringing those works, skills and expertise and principles, and the phrase I'm after is a kind of I can't do this because my professional responsibility would not. I'm an accountant, I take my professional work very, very seriously. I cannot, in that role, sign off this budget. That would be so counter to my professional responsibility, I wouldn't be able to do that. Now, that's the kind of thing you get from this. So I mentioned professionals. I mean, I think it's interesting that specifically referred to in the white paper. I think there's a bit of an inclusion issue around that. I don't think we want to make school governing so elitist and so exclusive that if you're not a member of a profession, you shouldn't be in there. But there's no doubt in my mind, again, business people and professionals can bring significant benefits. That then takes us to the whole issue of the employee governor and how we see that and how we work with that notion. Because it's this term here that kind of preceded this notion here. And that's what we're going to work with in the next third. I don't know if you want to turn the tape off now or what you want to do.
Okay, all right.
It's going to be a really...